her mouth. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight.
How about them Brewers?
Whoa.
Huh? 10 in a row? Picking up where they left off?
I'm not saying anything.
Sweeping the Dodgers for the season series?
Crazy.
First time a defending champ's been swept in a series of five games or more since 1997 when it happened in the Marlins. And by the way, when it happened in the Marlins, and it's because the Marlins sold off a bunch of pieces. Just taking it to the defending champs. One of the best rosters in baseball. Clayton Kershaw being a whiny little baby after the game.
Did
you see that?
I did. He was just ripping on his team.
Potentially.
It seems like it because there was that comedy of errors that took place.
Yeah.
Oh, and it is driving Cubs fans crazy. I saw a Cubs dedicated like social media account. They can't stand it. They're beside themselves. They don't think the Brewers play real baseball. They're nothing but luck merchants.
Okay.
I love it. I just love it. Just drive yourself crazy.
What's the George Weber?
We're two away.
You just jinxed it. See, I didn't want to jinx it. I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And I knew.
I don't think saying what it is jinxing
Why?
It. It's
I talked not. About the Oakland A's Moneyball streak, and people called me a jinx. I just wanted you to get called a jinx.
No, that's not how jinxes work. And first of all, like, I don't believe in that BS.
You don't believe in jinxes?
No, especially like announcer jinxes and stuff like that.
Totally believe in them.
Like, so, and again, not that it was that big of a deal, but so I did 5 years of Madison Mallards baseball.
Yeah.
When I got out of college, I did play-by-play for the Mallards for 5 years. And we had a no-hitter in that time spring. Rusty Shellhorn was the kid's name.
Oh,
it's a great name.
Rusty Staub.
Lefty threw the first no-hitter in Mallards history. And I felt the need to consistently update people on where we were at in the game. Because if you tune in the sixth inning, like, you got to know what's happening in the game.
No, that's fine.
You know what I'm saying? You have to update people. So you asking me, I'm not saying the Brewers are going to get there. I'm not going to say any of that. You ask the question, what is it for them to get the burgers from Webb?
But I think the announcer's a low-level jinx. What if a player goes over and talks to the pitcher? Aren't you not supposed to talk to him? Once he gets, say, to the sixth inning?
I would say it's a personal preference. But a lot of times, when the pitcher's grooving, yeah, you can't leave him alone.
Is that like golf? Because I played with a guy one time that wound up shooting a 63.
Mm-hmm.
And we were slapping it all around.
Yeah.
And he just tried to get out of his way.
Yeah, so I've played with somebody who shot a 64. They're just good. You know, like,
well, you could tell
you know
they're dialed. They're
good.
In the zone.
Like, and like, if I am ever shooting around like that,
yeah,
which I can't imagine is ever going to happen, like, I would rather just like talk with people because then I'm not thinking about it on the walk.
All right.
To every shot. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask you this.
All right.
How often does a 12 take down a 4?
You know, with strokes?
No strokes.
No strokes?
How often does a 12 take down a 4 when he's played 2 rounds in 2 years?
I mean, I would say not very often.
Okay.
I would not be betting on the 12.
Because it happened.
When did this happen?
Friday.
Wait, what do you know
Hold
about
on,
golf?
Friday? I went out to Tuckaway.
Okay.
The Spaniard played college golf at Missouri.
All right.
He's a 4. I don't even have a handicap.
Do you? Do you not have a handicap anymore? I can look that up.
I don't.
I'm going to look it up right now.
What happens if you don't have a frequency of rounds in a handicap? Like,
you have to have so many rounds in to get a handicap,
so you
right?
have to have, in order to get an official USGA handicap, you have to post 5 rounds.
And they can be 5 rounds, each one 5 years apart?
I don't know about that. I just know to establish a handicap, you need 5 rounds.
All
I don't know
right.
how
have,
close
I
they
have
need
the
to
actual
be together.
Statistics
okay.
here.
Well,
a 12 handicap
this.
Golfer will beat a 4 handicap golfer roughly 1 out of 10 times.
1 out of 10? Really? Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this.
Okay. There is no Chimura in the USGA system anymore.
Let me ask you this. Was it more the 12 isn't a 12 or the 4 isn't a 4?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Now a 12,
one's a sandbagger, one's a vanity.
Hold on. A 12 that is only played twice in 2 years?
Also a 12 who played at the highest levels of athleticism that you could possibly reach.
What are you thinking here? Now, a 12 that plays three times a week and is a 12, I can see him maybe beating him one out of every 10. But a 12...
If you're a 12, you're a 12.
No.
Like, all 12s, the thing about a handicap is they're all created equal. Your number is your number. And this is why... I just went through this. We just had our member guest. And a lot of clubs try to do different things to avoid, you know, the sandbagging, you know, if somebody's trying to get their handicap up, you know, so now they're playing at a higher number and they can get strokes when they shouldn't be getting strokes. A lot of places have gone to what's your lowest 12-month handicap, and that's what you play at for the event.
Right.
Because then nobody can try to juke the stats going in. 12's a 12, man.
No.
But there are a lot of vanity handicaps out there.
I want to ask you. What's worse? Not playing for money or what's worse? A guy that claims he's like a 2, but he's really an 8?
Mm-hmm.
Or a guy that claims he's a 14 and he's really a 10? Which would grind you more?
The sandbagger.
The sandbagger always.
Sandbagger. Because, like, if you want to.
I'm the opposite.
If you want to pretend that if you want to pretend you're that good, that's fine.
Like, I'm the other way.
I post my number, like, look, I would love for my number to be lower. I would. Like, I mean, if you play golf on a regular basis, you would always love your handicap to be lower. Guess what? It's not. I just post the scores, and the number is what the number is.
I know.
Which is great, because then, you know, I'm getting strokes. Sometimes I don't get strokes. Like, it's the only fair way to do that. Sandbaggers are, because, again...
It's nefarious.
Like, you're trying to take advantage of something. Whereas, like Joshy said, if you're a vanity handicap... You are only hurting yourself. And if you have a vanity handicap heading into a two-man event like a member guest, not only are you hurting yourself, you are now hurting your partner and putting him on an island.
See, the vanity, it's your typical country club D-bag, right? I played with a guy, right? A lot of rounds. 82 would be a good score, 84, 86. Mm-hmm. So then I would look at his...
Yeah.
And he'd go out and shoot 72. And I go, who were you playing with? Oh, I was playing with my wife.
Again.
72.
I would love Chu.
Yeah.
And I bet you loved to play him for money.
Yeah.
Because guess who's taking home that money? You are.
Yeah.
You're likely a
They just bother me. They bother that they just...
See,
it's annoying, that douchey is just like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I understand it? Yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because again, you're only hurting yourself.
Yes.
Like, again, when you go the other way and you're trying to manipulate it to make it seem like you're worse than you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, those to me are the worst people.
Right.
Because you're not posting your scores, you're posting false scores.
I'll come clean.
Uh-oh.
Are you a sandbagging SOB?
No. I beat him at the first 9.
Okay.
You know what happens to me when I'm somewhere I don't want to be playing a game?
Disengaged.
I was ready to go home after 12. I've had enough. I'm like, so I get the bleep-its, right?
Uh-huh.
So he did beat me on the back, but it didn't matter because I was really only playing 9.
Okay, so did he actually beat you overall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, but I don't look at it like that.
That's obvious.
I didn't look at.
Hey, I appreciate you coming clean and telling the truth.
Yes.
What are we doing?
I only wanted to play 9. I was ready to leave. Just get sick of it. I have no desire to play golf again. I don't know. Like, if you said, hey, you want to go play whistling today?
Mm-hmm.
Hard no.
What if I invited you for 9 out at Wisconsin Country Club?
No, don't want to play. I've had enough.
Just
I'm
for
good.
9.
I'm
what,
good.
What if I just
I
say, hey, let's go play 9?
I've had enough.
Okay.
I can put the clubs away. I'm good.
It seems like, though, your wife wants to push you more into playing than you want
she
to
does.
Play.
She does. She just doesn't want me watching Seinfeld as much as I do.
She just,
That's the only reason.
You're like a teenage kid whose parents are trying to get him out of the house. It's nice outside. Go do something outside.
Don't want to. Don't want to.
That's what you're like.
Yeah.
Do you ever complain about how bored you are when you're around the house?
All the time. Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I just lost. Just lose it. I just have no desire to play golf.
I'm bored.
Yes.
Go play golf. No, that's boring.
It was good, though. Good weekend.
Hanging out with the Spaniard. So the Spaniard, by the way, is a friend of Chewy's that he knows from St. Louis.
Yes.
So that is...
friend of show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's called in. We've had him on the show before. We've talked about your bets that you guys didn't do this year around the majors. I'm guessing that's because you've beaten him enough that he was sick of buying Robex.
But, you know, it started out... I told you, Jake Owen, country singer.
Yeah.
He was great. Outstanding. I was amazed. So it was a fundraiser. I forget what the fundraiser was for, but unbelievable. Good crowd.
Folds of Honor.
Yes, there you go. And they had four parachutes coming down, holding flags and stuff.
Makes sense if it's for Folds of Honor.
It looked as if they were a mile up because they were corkscrewing all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there's no way they can land. They dropped in the backyard. I was amazed. It was unbelievable. Wait, control they have doing that?
Explain. Say that again?
Parachuters.
People?
Yes.
What?
And landed.
Landed in their backyard?
Right in the backyard.
Huh.
It was amazing.
Well, again, now do they miss every once in a while? Yeah, but they've done plenty of things like that, you know, where somebody parachutes in, lands at like the 50 yard line of a football game.
Yeah, I guess I didn't.
They can be that accurate.
Yeah.
What if there's like wind that blew them into the stands?
Well, you use the wind to your advantage.
Yeah, you have to know the wind patterns before you take off. A gust can blow you
off. I'm
not
going to lie. Kind of wanted to see one go in the pool.
Of course you did.
It'd be funny.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get hurt or anything.
No.
Yeah.
I just missed the landing spot.
Missed the mark a bit.
Yeah, by a couple yards.
Okay. Yeah, it was great. Unbelievable.
We do want to get more into the Milwaukee Brewers. 10 wins in a row. Why does everybody have such a problem nationally with the Milwaukee Brewers? We dive into that question that is coming up next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But I do want to tell you about our friends at Palermo's. Because I'm sure you've heard us talking about it at this point. They partnered with Cheez-It. They made a Cheez-It frozen pizza. Cheez-It frozen pizza is the unexpected collaboration snack fans didn't know that they needed. And once you've had it, you'll know why. 12-inch, ultra-thin, crispy original Cheez-It flavored crust made with 100% real cheese, paired with your favorite pizza toppings to remind you of the irresistible cheesy flavor you love. And all month long, Cheez-It frozen pizza on sale, just $7.99 at all pick and save locations. So grab one and try one today. Think about it. It's got to be a square pizza, obviously, because it's a Cheez-It square cracker. And then all those great toppings that you trust Palermo's with. Palermo's Cheez-It. Find it today at your local pick and save.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
So you mentioned Super Bowls and parties and how they don't go hand in hand, which, again, is an absurd comment by you two, but it's just one of many on the show.
Dumber thing that Chewy has said this morning. Super Bowls and parties don't go hand in hand, or cheddar is not a top 10 cheese.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Over on the Carbliss Talk and Text line, Carbliss, Liss is more, 800-990-3776. Dave from Aaron says, I do want to give credit to Quintana and Priester. Yes, the big three is amazing, but when the playoffs roll around, these two pitchers are going to be great to have. Overall, Brewers about as gritty as a team as you can have. And it's funny because Quintana seems to be this guy that the fan base is split on, not necessarily in terms of his quality, because I think that's been undeniable, but it seems like some of them want to trade him and think that they can trade him, much like half the fan. It just seems like Brewers fans. And I'm curious where you sit. So hit us up on the Carbliss Talk and Text line. Call us or text us, 800-990-3776. Are you one of these fans that is just being like Chef Ed, trying not to get hyped up? Are you buying all the way in on the hype? Because it seems like because of the heartbreak of postseasons past, people want to get excited because how can you not be? They've just won 10 in a row. And as Chewy has pointed out, 6 of those 10 games are against the reigning defending world champion Los Angeles Dodgers. 10 in a row. They've caught the Cubs. They're tied for first place. They're a half game behind the Tigers for the best record in baseball. Like, it's hard not to get hyped up, but it seems like there's some people that just don't want to get their emotions too invested, because this is also a team, because they haven't won a postseason series since 2018, that they don't want to get their hopes up.
I've spent a decent amount of time talking about this in the past. I talked about it last week on Mr. Irrelevant. Living and dying with your team is what sports are about. If you don't allow yourself to be heartbroken, you're just apathetic. And then what are you even doing? You're wasting your time. Like, heartbreak is something that is good when you boil it all down. It's because you care and it matters. And your team was good enough. And sure, you'd love to see them win a World Series, or you'd love to see them win a Super Bowl. But if you don't care about it and you're trying to protect your emotions, what's the point? What are you doing?
So
here?
You don't temper expectations? See, my thing is, right now I'm sitting there going, all right, do you, because you hate to deplete your farm system, mm-hmm. right? So, but then I'm also like, I don't want to trade a player, even if there's a surplus at that position, just because of like what happened last year with Yelly, you know?
Sure. The problem becomes, to me, like, in theory, it sounds great if you could trade Jose Quintana for a bat that's going to help you.
Correct.
Here's the problem. What is a team that is selling off pieces going to do with a pitcher in his 30s on a one-year contract?
Yeah.
Like, they're not just going to give away a good player.
Correct.
Like, you have to give, the way these trades work is you have to give something from the future to help you for now. And that team that's trading off the piece is willing to take, you know, a gamble. It doesn't have to be Jesus Mate, you know, the Brewers' top prospect, or top Pena. Five prospect. It doesn't have to be Pena. But, you know, yeah, you're going to have to give up something in your minor league system that you like.
Are the Cubs going to do something?
So herein lies the problem, Chu, when it comes to the trade deadline. This is the problem. I don't know who's contending and who's pretending right now. And we're going to do that with the Packers later in the show. So let's use a team that you're familiar with, the Boston Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Red Sox, a month ago, were probably going to be sellers. The Rafael Devers trade, it just kind of blew up. They were below 500. Next thing you know, they won 10 in a row. And now the Red Sox currently have the third wild card in the American League. So no, they're probably not going to be selling off. And, you know, they got a game and a half over Tampa Bay. The Rangers have won, you know, been playing better. They're 500, just 3.5 back. So you're debating to yourself over the next 10 days, because we're 10 days away from the trade deadline in baseball. Okay, am I a team that's going to sell off, or am I not a team that's going to sell off? Another example. So I was on national, I was doing game day yesterday on ESPN Radio. We had Tim Kirchen on, and he said the team he is paying attention to the most is the Arizona Diamondbacks. Because they're right now they're 500. 100 games into the season, they are 50-50. 4.5 games behind the Padres for the final wild card spot. But they've been playing good. They've won 4 in a row coming out of the All-Star break. Eugenio Suarez is somebody who hit his 35th home run last night. Zach Gallen is somebody they could trade. They have another pitcher whose name is escaping me that they could trade. But they've got pieces they can
Merrill
sell off
Kelly?
To. Yes, Merrill Kelly. So they've got all these, they've got three pieces that a lot of teams would be interested in, should they sell. I don't know if the Diamondbacks are actually going to sell. So with the addition, and this has been something in baseball the last couple of years that has made the trade deadline more interesting, is with the addition of another wild card spot and so many teams being alive, there are way more buyers than there are sellers. And I'm sure the Cubs would love to do something, just like the Brewers would love to do something. But I don't know if there's going to be enough sellers out there for everybody to be able to add a piece that they'd like.
No, and I think, is Cincinnati out of it at 7.5 back, St. Louis 8.5 back? Because I think two teams are going to come out of this division.
St. Louis is only 2.5 out of the final wild card. So they're 7.5 in the division.
Yeah.
But they're 2.5 out of the final wild card. So they're alive for a playoff berth. Like Cincinnati, especially with some of the moves that they made this offseason, going out and getting a new manager, like they're going to convince themselves, no, we can still go get the wild card. Same thing with St. Louis. You know, Atlanta, yeah, that's probably the line of demarcation. I mean, Miami's probably that line of demarcation in the National League. But the Braves, don't really have anything that they really want to sell off. You know, like we saw a couple weeks ago, everybody lost their minds over the Ronald Acuña thing. They've got Acuña under contract for the next 3.5 years. Like, they don't actually want to move him. Right. So now you're left with the really bad teams of the Nationals, Pirates, and Rockies in the National League, White Sox, Athletics, Baltimore in the American League. And those teams are so bad that they just don't have that many pieces to sell off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it becomes an interesting game to try to play. And some teams might try to do half and half.
Yeah.
Some teams have like, oh, what if we just trade away players now for a different, and that becomes an interesting strategy. And that's where maybe a Quintana could be traded. I don't see it, but
I wonder what Passan would say now, though. If he would have to win in 10 straight going, you know what? I'm going to rethink this. I think this team is good enough without adding a bat to win it all. Because they are, right? You just beat the world champs, like you said, six times in a row.
Yeah.
And baseball is a lot like football. It's like, it's whoever's hot at the end of the year. Right?
Yeah. A couple of texts I want to get to here, but the problem I end up ultimately having is, as much fun as Andrew Vaughn has been, and I want to ride that ride until the wheels come off.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that he's going to be able to do this 2 months from now, 2.5 months from now? Is he still going to be swinging the bat this good? Because he hasn't swung it this good in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been a huge part. There was a part when he came to the plate last night. He ended up walking. He was 6-for-7 with runners in scoring position.
It's a good percentage.
That's not sustainable, is what that is. Right? So some of it is like you're having, you know, guys getting hot at the right times. And to me, somebody like Caleb Durbin, that's been more sustainable. He's proven over a length of time, like, oh, okay, maybe this guy just took a little bit of time to adjust to major league pitching. And now that he has, he's good. But also, if I can upgrade somewhere, like with a power bat, he kind of ends up being the odd man out.
Yeah, but still, don't discount or forget that he was the third pick in the draft.
Andrew Vaughn?
Yes.
Yeah, a number of years ago.
Like, still, though.
If you had to bet on him being this good 3 months from now, yes or no?
I'm with you. I don't think it's sustainable.
Yeah, I want to ride this high for as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the ultimate Brewers, like, magic that they'll just pick somebody up off the scrap heap by trading away Aaron Civale, who is unhappy. Fine, we'll trade you to the White Sox. Best luck. And then you get Andrew Vaughn. And every White Sox person that I know was telling me how bad he was. Whether that was Ashton Rotman, who's the former executive producer of this show, whether it was Jonathan Hood, our teammate down at ESPN 1000 in Chicago, it's not very good.
So, Josh, you're not pumped the brakes at all?
I mean, pump the brakes as far as what? What am I pumping
never
the brakes
on? Never get too high, never get too low.
No, I'm a fan. I'm not out there playing. I want them to do that.
Todd, Teddy, we got a lot of people on the talking text line who are agreeing with Josh. All in, Gabe. That's why we're fans. You're not all in. How do you call yourself a fan? Cubs fans back in the day, no way. They would never all in. It's their team.
Okay, fair enough.
Point of sports is to get excited about your team. Brewers aren't a 10-time champion that was expected to be a title contender. They have the 24th highest salary in the league, and they're dominating. Let yourself get hurt to reach full enjoyment. It's going to be okay. That from Teddy in Watertown. On the Carblues talking text line, 800-990-3776, we have Jeff in Milwaukee. Jeff, you're on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. What's going on, man?
Jeff?
Jeff, are you there?
Sorry, Jeff.
All right,
must put us on mute or something.
All right.
I know you wanted to talk about Chris Hook, which I think is an interesting enough discussion.
Call back, Jeff, if you'd like. But Chris Hook, when it comes to pitching, I mean, I don't think that's...
The one thing I am trying to figure out, and this isn't to take anything away from Chris Hook, but how much of this is like the Brewers pitching lab that they have in terms of like in the development system? That's something bigger than just a specific guy. It seems like there's something that happens throughout the process where they know the right strings to pull with the exact right guys to get them to play at their best.
I think it's a little from column A, Josh, and a little from column B, because we've seen the guys come up, and not just Mizorowski, right? Whether that's been Robert Gasser, you know, who I know just went out for his rehab assignments, Logan Henderson, you know, the guys in the system that have come up and had success. So clearly the pitching lab has had more hands-on than Chris Hook. But then when they go and they trade for somebody like last year, like Aaron Civale, who really wasn't, you know, anything, you know, he was fine, but they're able to get the most out of him because, yeah, they're able to kind of identify what's going on. Let's see if we can get Jeff this time and have a good connection. Jeff in Milwaukee, you're on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great, Jeff. What's going on, man?
So this is obviously my approach is I'm a big believer in them. You know, if this comes down to their front office, and obviously the players are playing great together, but they made it very clear from the perspective how they wanted to build a team. I kind of compare this to the Packers, who are not exactly sure how they're building their team. But what I'm saying is they're building this team on pitching and great defense. And as long as they have those two things, you're going to be in just about every game. If you watch the game yesterday, they do not win that game without Joey Ortiz at shortstop.
Absolutely not. That game should have been over.
Absolutely.
Game should have been over if Andrew Vaughn catches a baseball.
Right. Now, the thing I got to say is, and I'm going to, is a rhetorical question. Is Hook the best kept secret in baseball? All that guy does and his staff is take pitchers that were struggling and makes them into great pitchers. It's just an unbelievable thing if you look at the last two or three years. I am not worried about the postseason. You know, Williams, you guys, think about it. Williams last year, they had everything the way they wanted. He came in and he blew it.
Mm-hmm.
And the year before, I think he cut his hand, you know, because he lost his temper. You know, so, I mean, he was not somebody who was reliable. He just wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I just think, and what did they get? They got Durbin for him. It's unbelievable.
They got Durbin, and Nestor Cortez, who is is going to play a role in this team before it's all said and done, as well. By the way,
exactly. So those two things, it just shows you guys, their front office, is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's money.
We appreciate the call, Jeff. We appreciate the call. Thank you, because that's a point, Chew, that you have made time and time and time. And I know not a lot of fans agree with you. I agree with you that the Brewers front office is the one you trust the most.
Is the best of the three, I believe. And it's the odds are stacked against them. You have to be that good in order to compete the way baseball is set up, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what Tampa Bay does. You know, they're always in the mix. Analytics, front office, good moves, getting rid of guys at the right time.
But, I mean, you know, the one thing, and I think Josh brings this up with the pitching lab, but also just the development. Like the Brewers development system, you know, and Jeff made the comparison to the Packers. I don't know if the Packers have done a great job developing necessarily, because we haven't seen any developed into stars.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see like the development of Jackson Churio, development of Bryce Terang.
Sal Frelick.
Yeah. Guys that went through the system and are fantastic
mm-hmm.
and have been good for this team. So it's a little bit of everything that they do. It's not just one thing that I think they're specifically good at. In athleticism, like to boil it down to what Jeff was saying, I think the one thing that they've really done is tried to build this team around athleticism.
How was Williams doing with New York?
I don't know if he's back in the closer. He stunk early. was taken out of the closer role, put back into the eighth inning role, and then he kind of started becoming Devin Williams again.
Okay.
There's another thing Jeff said there that about Chris Hook being the best kept secret. He's no secret.
I can't imagine.
And the Brewers aren't a secret anymore. I know we don't get talked about the way we would like to on the national conversation, even though it's happening more and more. But if you make 6 or 7 playoffs and you are a half game back of the best record in all of baseball, everyone's noticing. And if you look at the MLB networks and the guys at ESPN who are covering baseball, they're all talking about the Brewers. They all know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The tough part is, and the fun part is that the Cubs are also this good.
Mm-hmm.
They play 8 times, I believe, in the next month. Those 8 games are going to be incredibly important.
Yeah, those are going to be huge.
Because right now, they are tied for the best record in the National League. But if they don't finish in first place in the division, no matter what, they're a wild card. How nice would it be to just skip over the three-game series that we had our hearts broken in last year and just go straight to the division? Just get five. You know, you have to get beat three times. And there's some off days, so you can kind of take a breath if things don't go your way. Like, just getting that bye, which I didn't think was possible, is very much on the table now with 63 games to go for the Brewers.
Because I just looked at projected wins now before this last series in L.A., and it was at 91. So my guess is it's probably even higher than that now.
Did you get in on Brewers win total, Joshy, over at Potawatomi Sportsbook?
Yes, I did.
What was it at the beginning of the season? Was it 82?
83 and a half.
Okay.
So I did the math on it.
They got to win. They got to win 24 more games.
Yeah, I was doing the math on it earlier, and I think they could go 13 games under 500 the rest of the way and still reach
cash.
Yeah,
still cash in.
You're liking that bet?
Feeling pretty good about it.
All right. Okay.
And again, a lot of these pitchers are now getting healthy. Like early in the season, a lot of these guys weren't healthy. Now Woody's healthy. You've got Jose Quintana, who's fully healthy. Nestor Cortez about to be healthy. With the addition of, obviously, the Miz.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't get your...
Very good spot.
Get hyped. Alan's saying he's with Shep Ed, not getting too hyped.
It's got to get a little closer for me.
Gabe and Josh, you have to put in some years and have more winning seasons in your time with the crew than I have ratio-wise. I've had a lot of uninspired Major League Baseball in this town. A big part of baseball is chemistry. We've seen it with the crew and chemistry before, and I've seen what happens when you break the chemistry.
I think that was a little shot at the Dodgers.
Well, I think it's also buyer beware.
It's also old guy arrogance.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I've been here before. I don't care. This game's happening in 2025. It's a different season.
You're only as good as your last game.
What happened in the past doesn't matter right now.
You know what stinks, though?
What's that?
If they win tonight, and they're playing, like, again, and this is the only, this is like the ultimate first world problems, right? If they win tonight and they're going for the web game tomorrow, and Miz is on the mound, which, hell yeah.
Feel pretty good.
It's in Seattle. It sounds so damn late. It's like a 9 o'clock start.
I won't be up.
Just, damn it. I wish this game, like, obviously it'd be better if it was at home, but at least, you know, be closer to the time zone instead of all the way out west. But again, that's, beggars can't be choosers. When you've won 10 in a row, it's definitely worth staying up. Milwaukee just got hotter, announcing the buys of summer at Ewald Automotive Group. Get the lowest prices guaranteed on new vehicles. Ewald will beat your best price by $500, or they'll pay you $500 cash guaranteed. With over 1,500 vehicles to choose from, you're sure to find that perfect ride for your family. 11 brands, 10 locations, one easy experience. Don't miss the Ewald Buys of Summer sales event. It's going on right now. See dealer. It expires at month's end. And it's all easy with Ewald. That's why I use Ewald. They're easy. They take care of you. Great people at Ewald Automotive and the 11 brands and 10 locations. All starts at ewaldauto.com.
You're listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
He hates the ending of all comedies. Apparently doesn't like happy endings.
I love happy endings. Don't take it that far.
Maybe that's a vote for Groundhog Day for you.
On 94.5 ESPN.
The season of lists is coming to a close, but there's still a couple more that had to be released over at ESPN.com. By the way, Packers reporting fully to camp today. First practice Wednesday, stockholders meeting coming up on Friday. Do we have anybody from the station that's going up for the stockholders meeting? So I know we've got some stockholders. No idea?
I have no idea. I know Kyle Wallace and Strofe went last year.
I know they went last year. I mean, I know Vince Vitrano is a stockholder. I don't think that he's got time in his schedule to get up there from our sister station, WTMJ. But either way, very exciting. So the Packers, in the final list in ESPN.com's series of ranking all the different position groups, they had one more list that came out Chew, and it is total roster. Ranking the roster, top to bottom, where do you think the Green Bay Packers ranked on ESPN's list this year, where a handful of analysts, Mike Clay, Aaron Schatz, Seth Walder, ranked every lineup in the league? How do the Packers stack up against everybody else?
8, 9, 10.
14th.
Really?
14th.
What were they last year?
Doesn't have it on here.
That doesn't really matter, though. I mean, when you're talking, because I believe Washington was...
So I'll run through
28, the top. 29 last year, yeah. And they wound up going to the NFC Championship game.
I'll run through this for you. Baltimore's 1.
Yes.
Philly, 2.
Okay.
Detroit, 3.
Fair.
A.O. Buffalo is 4.
Okay.
Kansas City, 5.
Okay.
Denver Broncos, 6.
That one's a little...
They really like the entire roster. And that defense is...
Defense is solid.
Really good.
Weapons on offense.
Cortland Sutton's pretty good.
Yeah.
Cortland Sutton. They signed Evan Engram. Washington made a jump up to 7th on this list. Rams are 8. Cincinnati is 9. The San Francisco 49ers are 10. To get to the Packers, you have the Vikings at 11, Tampa Bay at 12, and Houston at 13. So two of the three teams in the division rank ahead of the Packers in terms of what some NFL experts think about their roster.
That's because lack of superstars. Mm-hmm. I think if you went C's to C's, B's to B's, they're solid. But the problem is not a lot of A's.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little, I don't think I'd put them that high. Because you look at Cincinnati, man, their D last year was terrible. Offense, solid.
Yeah, the offense is spectacular. And that's because of Joe Burrow and the two wide receivers that they have. But yeah, that defense is.
I don't think that tells us much. I mean, outside of the top five,
mm-hmm.
The gaps between the teams listed there, I don't think it's that big of a. Big a deal. They just need B players to play like A's, and then they're right there.
Or they just, and for the Packers, it's not even necessarily B players playing like A's, it's B players becoming A players.
Yes.
Because they're a young mm-hmm. team, and that's been my biggest issue. They've got solid players, man. Like this is, and again, I think that's 14th is reflected as that. That's a playoff team. 14th best roster, that's a playoff team. 14 teams make the postseason. And honestly, kind of reflects the seeds that they've had the last couple of years, being the 7th seed in the NFC.
Yeah. Did they do the execs? Did you see that list? I was just wondering where they would put Goody and his guys.
I have not seen anything like that.
Because my guess, where do you think he would wind up on that list?
Goody? I mean, kind of somewhere similar to where the roster is.
14?
Yeah, maybe top 10, maybe. Maybe just outside.
I'm
guessing he would be. I mean, Cincinnati's done a good job of drafting, but they've also done a pretty good job of upsetting pass rushers. So I don't know if you can put the Bengals front office in front of the Packers.
Because I'm just trying to weigh the front office to the development, because development certainly shares in some of the blame. When it comes to receivers.
Sure.
Right.
But again, like that to me is the age old question is how much of that is, and we talked about this briefly last week with Jason at the golf outing, like how much of the development is also on the players given the lack of time versus what you had? Like you got a lot more time with your coaches than someone like Tucker Kraft gets today because of how the collective bargaining agreement has been set up in the NFL.
But you can still, you can spend a lot of time on your own in the off season working, and I know there's more than a handful of guys on your roster that do not embrace the weight room. Let's just call it that, right?
So, when you were working on the off season,
yes,
what did you do?
Were you just lifting weights, doing some cardio?
Like, what were you doing to get yourself ready, or earlier in your career, doing away from the facility to get yourself better?
This is how I approached it. All right. So I was always a weight room guy. Always.
Oh, really?
Always a weight room guy.
Josh, can you believe that?
So I would take 2 weeks at the end of the season, and then I would get heavy.
We have breaking news.
I never knew that about you.
So I would get heavy. And when I say heavy, I would get 10 pounds over my playing weight.
Okay.
Because when you're heavier, you're stronger.
Okay.
So then I would go in, crush weights from, say, February to end of March. And then I would start paring down. Introduce more cardio, start shaving the body up, cutting it down.
Getting to what the weight is that you should be
playing
at.
It was more body fat than it was weight.
Okay.
I followed my body fat more. So I would get it down. So, you know, February, when I was a little beefy, I would be maybe 10% body fat. And then I would try to, I'd get that down to 7.
Okay.
Right? And the weight will follow that. But you get weaker.
Sure,
you're much
getting
stronger.
Smaller.
Yeah. So then, you know, you're out
and,
there.
And as a tight end, you're trying to fight, especially a tight end in your day,
yeah,
where you weren't getting detached from the line as much. It's a delicate balance, yeah. I'm assuming, of having that strength and yet having the agility that you need to go, yeah, out, run routes and get past defenders.
So then, because I would off-season in Scottsdale, and there were guys that played out there, and then, say, April, May-ish, then you're introducing, all right, let's start running some routes. Let's get this feet under you and stuff.
So you just work out with other players?
Yeah.
Like just
or then
to...
I would come back here. I'd probably be, okay, back here in May when a lot of guys weren't back here. And I'd have the strength coach one-on-one and just do like functional workouts that would, you know, mimic what I had to do on the field.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's just more of a plan that players have to receive at this point. I don't know if you can get that time with the strength coach anymore.
You probably can if you stay up there. But I was doing things like, and they were brutal workouts because they would have, you know, the Bobcats, the John Deere you see, mm-hmm, on the field with that. So the strength coach would get in that, and I would essentially get myself into a blocking position and then push that thing 40 yards, maybe 10, 12 times.
Yeah.
You know? And there's guys, I'm telling you, great players too. They would give 30% into the weight room.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had their ability in the way I attack the offseason, mm-hmm, oh. But some guys just don't do it. And then that's how you don't develop.
Mm-hmm.
Like these receivers, man, someone's got to like rise to the top. They're all talented, right?
In their own ways, yeah.
I mean, they're all talented. It's just like, dude, let's go.
But it's about developing.
You got to make that next set. And yeah. I don't know who's putting in the work and who's not putting in the work. Because clearly last year, no one rose to the top. Mm. Out of four,
absolutely not.
No one rose to the top.
No.
So that's, you know. And you always hear, oh, this guy is in the best shape of his life. You know?
Usually don't they save that for a guy who's like early 30s? Like Kenny Clark.
Yeah.
Like I am fully expecting on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday to get a Kenny Clark best shape of his life story. Like, it's an older veteran, you know, and the Packers, yeah, don't have a ton of those, so the prospects of who that story is going to be about this training camp are few and far between. But maybe, like, Rashawn Gary, best shape of his life. Yeah, but there is always, every team, every year, has one guy who's in the best shape of his life.
It feels like a Romeo Dobbs year.
D-lineman. Best shape of his life. And I'm not naming names, D-lineman. They were the laziest. I'm telling you, they just, weight room is like, okay, you know? O-linemen, they grind, right? You think of an O-lineman in there.
Is part of that, because you have told before, I don't know how many people know this or not, that you have said on the record that Reggie White did not know where the weight room was.
He did not. But when you can still go in there and not see the weight room and do 315 for 14 times... You good.
When you're the best, yeah, pass rusher of all time.
You're good.
Who literally nobody can copy the hump move that, yeah, he had, just shucking, yeah, 310-pound offensive lineman out of the way with one arm.
Yeah.
But does that factor in? Like
there were just guys. Like, I love JT to death.
Jeff Thomason.
Not crushing the weight room. You know?
Do you think they talked about you as you were a meathead who was in the weight room too much?
Meathead. Because I was the strongest guy in the team for
pound for three
years running. No, we would test out 315, right?
Yeah.
And all the linemen Eventually, they started coming in and watching me test.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, I'd have their numbers already.
Yeah.
So I'd be in there.
Like, strongest, I'd be in there. Strongest guy on the offense?
Strongest guy on the team. The guy who
did. You were stronger than Reggie.
Oh, I could do 315 more than him. The most I did 315 was 19 times.
Yeah, sure, which is great.
Yeah.
But also during practice, oh, Mr. White, look up, Mr.
Absolutely.
White.
Absolutely.
Because you were scared of Reggie White.
But I won the weight room. It's kind of like the nine holes I played against. I won the weight room. So the linemen,
I can't fight him there.
Marco, Timberman.
Yeah.
Frank knew he didn't have a shot. who else would be in there? You know, a handful of guys. So I would test. By the time I racked it, they were out the door and gone. Gone, you know? And you know me, I'd never say anything to them for the entire year, which is a lie, because I'd remind them all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. Daily, almost.
But I just love, I just always loved lifting and pumping iron. A lot of guys don't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys don't. But guys with unbelievable ability, I would always sit there and go, dude, are you kidding me? I mean, they are so good without even touching the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if Reggie attacked it? We could play with 10 guys on defense.
I was about
defense.
To say, honestly, Chewy, I cannot. Because that's how dominant he was already without doing it.
Yeah.
But that's it for some of those guys, right? They don't develop that habit, that work ethic.
Mm-mm.
Because they're just so naturally talented. They were able to
Correct.
Coast through high school,
yep.
coast through college,
yes.
just on their talent. And then they get to the NFL. And some guys are, I mean, we're probably talking about all-time greats, right? That still are able to do things like that.
Yeah.
But then there are some who then get to the NFL and don't realize the work ethic it takes. And those are the ones that burn out and become busts.
I mean, what I've told you about Salad, you think he's crushing the weight room?
Wearing his sweats
over his clothes that he came to work.
Yeah. No, can't imagine.
I don't think I've ever seen him in the weight room.
But also he played in the NFL for 12, 13 years.
Yeah. So, but we'll see. I'm interested to see if any of these receivers rise or it's going to be another year where...
Maybe it's because I haven't seen any of the other ones, but all my eggs are in the Matthew Golden basket.
Okay.
They're all in the Matthew Golden basket.
Fair.
Let me tell you about our friends at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. For windows with the strongest resilience, you need the Pella Experience. Earlier this month, the entire ESPN Milwaukee team out at the Pella Experience Center, so you should do that as well. That way you can see, feel, open, close, and compare dozens of window and door options from 7 different Pella lines all side by side. I've been out there before. The customizable options that they have, unbelievable. I'm so glad I decided to get a door. We're getting closer and closer. First week of August, they're going to be out there putting my new front door in. Can't wait for it to be on my house. And of course, I was only going to use Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. You should too. Stop by soon. If you order before July 31st, get 0% interest for up to 5 years. Certain restrictions apply. Visit the Pella Experience Center in Brookfield or schedule that free in-home consultation today at PellaWI.com.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
The other side of the world, and I'll let you know if I want to come back and coach your little game.
He's Jay Peterman.
Ian Rappaport tweeting yesterday, and I thought this was interesting.
Lady.
The Broncos Burma? The
that
last 2 weeks. You guys done?
I got more.
On 94.5 ESPN.
It was just a big golf weekend for you, pal.
Yeah.
You played some golf.
Watched some golf.
I was about to say, you got in this morning. You were pretty locked into the Open Championship and Scottie Scheffler winning.
I'm just amazed on how good he is. And I'm not alone in that assessment. If you listen to Rory and I forget who else said it.
Yeah, Rory's talked about how he's tried to copy aspects, especially the mental game of Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah. Was it good for the Open, though, or bad? Because when he was up 5 at the beginning of it.
Well, so, I mean, he was up, you know, he was up 4 to start the day, and you're thinking, oh, okay, and he's playing with Hao Tong Li, who can't imagine a lot of people outside of myself know who that is, but he was the one playing with Scotty, and he stuffed it, like 5 feet on the first hole.
Yeah.
Scotty hit it inside that. It's like, oh, all right, I guess it's actually over. You know, you're thinking, oh, maybe somebody could put pressure on him, maybe he feels a little of that pressure, and he doesn't. But I would make the argument that, yeah, I mean, it was probably a little bit boring, probably ultimately didn't help the ratings, which usually aren't very good just because of when it typically is in the morning. Scottie Scheffler continuing to rack up major championships is a good thing for golf because he becomes a dominant force that people want to tune and see. Even if he has this perception of being boring, and we talked about his comments last week.
Yeah.
The more and more he talks, the more fascinating I find him.
But the fact that because he is a little boring, right? He's a little boring. I mean, I like listening to him.
Yeah.
But does that take away the perception on how good he really is? Because I would love to see him right now in his day go head-to-head against Tiger.
Yeah. So the thing that everybody loves to talk about with Tiger is like the recovery shots that he would hit. Obviously, you know, he chipped in, you know, off the green in the Masters back in 2005. Just hitting his driver wasn't always a weapon for Tiger. He would get offline.
Yeah.
But then part of Tiger's superpower was he could
hit down from anywhere.
In ridiculous shots and get him, and his iron play was spectacular. Scotty's just solid at everything.
He's solid, but he's got an unconventional swing. Like, why does he get that feet? Why does he get it out of the way?
The right foot just kind of slides.
Why?
Just the way he's always done it. It works for him.
It's weird. It's almost like he slipped, and then it's piped right down the middle.
It takes you a while. Like, the first time I remember ever watching Scottie Scheffler, I thought he slipped. Like, oh, his back foot slipped. And it was, like, still a drive that he piped down the middle and wasn't a big deal. And then you see it again, you're like, oh, he means to move his feet like that.
Yeah.
It's weird. Works for him.
And then why does he claw from just 15 feet in and not everywhere?
Because he doesn't feel like he can hit it hard enough with the claw if it's like a 40-foot putt.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Rory, like Rory, if you were Rory, you'd be looking for some credit for this run of dominance from Scottie Scheffler.
Yes.
Because Rory, for those who don't, there's different types of putters. There's a blade putter. Think about, like, if you've ever watched golf, Tiger Woods always used to use one. It's thinner.
It's a classic.
Just a classic.
Cameron, yeah.
Yes, classic look. And then there are mallets, which are bigger, thicker. A lot of people have used the TaylorMade Spider.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looks like like a brick at the end of it. And it's more forgiving. You don't have to be as precise. And a couple of years ago, when Scotty was really, you know, not really going putting well.
Yeah.
Rory jumped out of broadcast and said, man, I don't understand why he doesn't use a mallet. Scotty started using a mallet the next week and really hasn't looked back.
Yeah.
Three majors.
Good decision.
Players Championship. FedEx Cup Championships. Like, he just continues to rack up wins. So if you would be going, I deserve some of the credit if you were Rory in that situation.
Tiger in his day, Scotty head to head. Who you taking?
Tiger. Tiger won the U.S. Open by 15 strokes.
Yeah, that's Pebble Beach. It's not that hard.
To win by 15?
I heard it's not a great course. I'm just saying, I have heard that.
When you get away from the water, people are typically...
Have you played it?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not. Stephen Watson has.
Okay.
From on the tee. He has. I have not. It's on the list. I certainly want to do it.
Okay.
But yeah, Tiger won by 15. He won an Open by 8.
So what does Tiger win by over Scotty?
In prime, over the course of 4 days, I don't know, two or three shots.
Okay.
He is as good as Tiger right now, like statistically, because there are a lot of places, Data Golf is a big one that does like kind of deep dive statistically, try to like quantify certain things. He's as good as Tiger was from like 02 to 06. Like that second run that he had with Hank Haney after he left Butch and he kind of shut everything down. That second run he had with Haney when he won the Masters in 05 and won another U.S. Open, PGA, British Opens.
I could throw a caveat in there very easily.
Which is?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Why he got hurt, why things are exploding in his body. Just saying.
Because he got in a car accident?
Nope. Just saying.
Don't know exactly where
you're
going.
Yeah, you do. A lot of guys did it in the NFL from early 2000s to the end of 2000s. No, it's not the end of 2000s, though, is it? I guess 2010.
I mean, are people... and 2010 would be the end of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah. That decade.
See the stats of... Was it... Since his first major to now, was that what it was?
Yeah, so it took Tiger and Scotty the exact amount of days between winning their first and fourth majors.
And then what was the other one about the amount of strokes that he has on the rest of the field in major events? It was like The next closest person was 30 strokes less over, and I think it was the same thing. Like that during the same duration, his first major to now, he's ahead of the field by like 40 strokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not even.
How old is Scheffler?
So the fun part, he is 29.
Oh, okay.
When he goes for the career Grand Slam next year at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, that Sunday is his 30th birthday. So he could win the career Grand Slam.
Before 30?
On his 30th birthday.
At 30.
Is that the first ever?
What do you mean, first ever?
Well, did Tiger win the Grand Slam before he turned 30?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He won four in a row before he turned 30.
So how many years does he have left in prime?
With it being different, like, I mean, if he played, so the fascinating thing about Scottie Scheffler to me is, the fascinating thing for me is the fact that he could just walk away at any point.
Yeah.
Because of some of the comments he made before, mm-hmm. or he could play and be really good until he's in his 40s. Like, he could play, not at this level, but I think he could still be really, really good into his 40s.
Is that because there's LIV Golf, though, which dilutes the field?
Doesn't dilute it for the majors.
Doesn't dilute it.
Not for the majors.
Okay.
You know, because everybody plays in the majors.
No, I know, but LIV, they got their money, so they're kind of fat and happy.
Yeah, but
and
a lot of those...
And they don't practice as much.
A lot of those guys are older. You know, like the guys like Bryson, Brooks, like the guys who were still going to be relevant anyway, mm-hmm. they still worked at it.
Okay.
Get back to the Brewers. Trade deadline, 10 days away. 2 minutes, Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Jen, Gabe, and Chewy are back after this on 94.5 ESPN.